Sen means teaching, Rim means steps, and Chemo means the great book on the steps of the teaching. We're going to study about Yidas from this book, and also later in the class we're going to do Dundros, which are animals, okay? So we're going to cover those two realms based on this book, Tenrin Chemo. Tenrin Chemo was written by Geshe Drolungpa. Say Geshe.
Geshe.
Drolungpa.
Drolungpa.
Geshe.
Geshe.
Drolungpa.
Drolungpa.
If you're new, I noticed a couple of new people tonight. You don't have to learn Tibetan. This is the English track. But I just want you to get a seed in your mind for Tibetan. And then someday you will learn it. I think about a quarter of the people in the Tibetan class thought they were going to take the English track. They ended up learning Tibetan. So someday you probably will. Geshe means spiritual friend, and in the early days of Tibetan Buddhism, it was really bad. It was just your individual spiritual guide. Much later in Tibet, it came to mean, it was a kind of degree given by monasteries. But early in the history of Buddhism, even in Sanskrit, it's called Kalyanamitra, which means spiritual guide, spiritual friend. Drolung is a place like Kansas. Drolungpa means like the guy from Kansas. So there was this Geshe from Drolung, and his name was Geshe Drolungpa. He lived, we don't know his dates. We know the exact dates of his teacher, we know the exact dates of his students, and we guess that he lived around 1100 AD. This book is 1,000 pages long. The Geshe of those days, who were called Kadampas, they didn't write any books, really. They wrote very, very little. They were mostly meditative. They were the first Buddhists in Tibet of our tradition. So I like to, whenever we can, it's good to study something that they wrote, but they didn't write much. They wrote mostly these two or three page things. Geshe Drolungpa, he wrote a huge presentation of all the steps of the Buddhist teachings, all the way from the beginning to the end. He wrote this huge text called Tenrin Chimo. Even in the days of Tsongkhapa, it was pretty rare. When did Tsongkhapa live?
Okay.
We called Jay Tsongkhapa. And he lived... Jay Tsongkhapa is generally considered the greatest master ever to be produced in Tibet. He wrote 10,000 pages of commentaries. If you ever try to read one of them, you'll be lucky to make it through the whole thing in a few years, seriously. And he wrote 10,000 pages of these things. They say he was just taking dictation from Manjushri. And you believe it if you learn Tibetan and try to read his works. You believe it, because they're just incredibly deep, packed, difficult to read, and incredible. And you can't believe that a human being could write them. Jetsongkhapa is probably the greatest master ever produced out of Tibet, except for our root lama. But no joke. But he wrote a book called the Lamrim Temple, which is the great book on the steps of the what? Anything look similar? I mean, basically he's just taking Geshe Drolungpa's book, and you know, which is good writing in Tibet, because basically the lama in front of you was probably his lama or his lama was omniscient. They knew everything. So you don't have to write a new book. You can just rearrange the books from before and you're a great Buddhist author. That's okay. The same with painting. We don't change the Buddhist face. We don't change his look. It's not considered a virtue with spiritual things to change them. It's a virtue to take the same elements and present them to your culture in a certain way, but you never change them. So basically, we've come to think that Jetsongkhapa, we know that he bumped into this book 6 years before he wrote the Lamrim Temple. It's interesting. So he basically took that book and rearranged it, and it became, this is the greatest book ever written in Tibetan poetry. And probably no one will be able to write anything greater now. Tibetan language is degenerating. It's being lost in the world. The Tibetans in Tibet who are still living there can hardly speak Tibetan anymore. The Tibetans in India don't speak Tibetan very well, can't read very well. the Tibetans in China can't read Tibetan at all, but when they come to the monastery in India, they have to relearn how to read. So probably I think this will be the great, the masterwork of Tibetan literature. So I think it's really great to study this book. This book was lost for a long time. His Holiness found one copy in Siberia about 15 years ago. And it was a very bad copy. You couldn't read it very well. And then we located one about 5 years ago. So now we have a beautiful copy. So I think it's cool that you get to read it. So we took the reading from this book. It's been put out to CD-ROM now, and it's going to be given away all over the world. So I think it's cool that you get to read from the Tenrin Chenmo. So your reading is from this Tenrin Chenmo, which Jetsun Khapa used to write the greatest book ever written in Tibet. So you're very honored to be the first people to read from that. And Geshe Drolongpa gives a very good presentation on Yidang. He says there are four main causes for Yidang. One general cause and three specific causes. I'll give you the general cause first. If you want to be born as a Yidang, do the 10 bad deeds to medium strength. Okay. What does medium strength mean? I mean, this is just a general... What are the 10 bad deeds? I mean, first of all... Yes, let me go like that. Killing. Treat with your body. Killing.
Stealing.
Sexual misconduct. Mainly adultery, but including other sexual kinds. There's a long list, sexual misconduct. Then four kinds in your speech, which are...
Lying.
Slander, meaning talk that splits other people up. We don't have a good word in English. Divisive speech, and then
harsh
words. Harsh words can be sweet words said in a bad way, right? Or with bad intent, but they hurt somebody. And then fourth one in speech,
idle
talk, like just wasting time talking. So that's so far you got seven, and then there's three in your mind, three that you do in your mind, which are what? Coveting, which is basically an inward, you know, you basically want things that other people have. You're jealous of them and you're trying to get the things that other people have. Number nine?
Malice.
So people call malice or ill will. It means being happy when other people screw up, basically. And last one?
Wrong view.
Wrong view, mainly, there's no future life. There's no such thing as karma. I mean, if no one sees me do something, there'll be no effect. You know, if I do something bad in the privacy of my own room and nobody knows about it, there won't be any bad effects from that. Those are the basic ten bad deeds. Those are an abbreviation of how many? 84,000. I mean, the Buddha said, and the Abhidhamma says, okay, it's 84,000 bad deeds, and roughly you can group them into 10 so that human beings can remember them at least. There are that many. If you do them to medium strength means, like, very light strength would be if you do it, if you, for example, broke minor vows over and over again, or something like that. Heavy strength would be if you premeditated, intentional, took a long time to prepare the weapon, in a great state of hatred over a long period of time, and then went and killed somebody. And that person was some kind of maybe holy person, you know, like the Dalai Lama or something. That would be a heavy one. Medium means somewhere between them. Okay? So medium strength is like that. To do those 10 bad deeds in medium strength is the general cause to be born as a preta. That's just a whole general cause. Then there are like three very specific attitudes that can get you born as a preta. You don't have to know this about me. I'm just trying to plan it, okay? Say Jimba.
Jimba.
Namsum.
Namsum.
Machimba.
Machimba.
Jimba.
Jimba.
Namsum.
Namsum.
Machimba.
Machimba.
Jimba. What does Jimba mean?
Jimba.
Yeah. That's his name. Giving, okay? Jimba is the first paramita, for example. Giving. Okay? The act of giving. Jimba. Namsum means it's the same as Lamsum Namsum. What's that?
Three times.
Yeah, it means the three types. The three types. Majimba means not giving. So the first cause to be born as a preta is failing to give the three types of giving. failing to give the three types of giving. What are the three types of giving? The Sanam Chamo doesn't say, but you can look it up in other books. And they are, say, Sang Singhi, Jimba. Sang Singhi, Jimba. Sang Sing means material wealth, you know, like houses, beds, food, drink, things like that. Material stuff, physical things. The things that people need to live. Jimba means the giving of those things. So the first kind of giving, and in fact the lowest kind of giving, is to give people shelter, food, bed, things like that. That's called Samsingi Jimba. Second kind is, say, Minjikpe.
Minjikpe.
Jimba.
Jimba.
Minjikpe.
Minjikpe.
Jimba.
Jimba.
Okay. Who's Jigje? Yamataka. Bhadama. Okay? But it means the fierce, the frightener. The frightener. So, Minjikpa means, Minjikpa means what? Me? Not to be frightened. So, Minjikpa means not to be frightened. Jimba means giving. The giving of not to be frightened. What does it mean? It means protection. Okay. The Lamrim Chimbo says protecting people from muggers, wars, other threats to their lives. The Namdo Lakshan, the liberation in our hands, by Kabongan, says don't think that you have to be in the UN to give Minjikpe Jimba. It doesn't say UN, okay? But it says you can give Minjikpe Jimba to a flea that's walking across your arm. Now, if you just pick it up carefully and put it on the side instead of smashing it, you just made the gift of Minjikpa. You just gave the gift of protecting somebody from harm, from fear. Okay. So Minjikpe Jimba is basically protecting people from dangerous things that would harm them. And that's the second kind of giving. Third kind of giving. Say, Chirki,
Jimba.
Chirki,
Jimba.
What's Chir?
Dharma.
Okay? Chir is Dharma. Here meaning Dharma teachings. Okay? Dharma teachings. And Jimba is giving. Chirki Jimba. That's the gift of the Dharma, teaching someone Dharma. That's the highest kind of teaching, highest kind of giving. Because let's say all this stuff that I'm saying today is true. Let's say that I can convince you what would make you be born as a preta in your next life, which could be 10 minutes from now. You know, let's say that somehow I can convince you that such a thing is possible. And let's say that somehow I can show you what causes it and you avoid that and it saves you from being born as a yidam, as a preta. Then that'd be a lot more important than these kinds of giving. That would be some kind of incredible kind of giving. So, you know, assuming that what we're going to say tonight is true, assuming it sinks in to you, then it could protect you even tonight from not being born as a preta, if you get hit by a car on the way home. Okay. So that's the highest kind of giving. So the first cause of being born as a preta is to fail to give these three kinds. If someone needs them, you have to give them. Okay? You have to try. And there's a lot of things to say about that. There's gray areas. You know, do you give a guy at the subway a dollar if he asks you for alcohol or something? We're not talking about that. We're talking about cases where mainly you know that it's right to give the thing. The person needs it very much. You have it, and maybe you even have it in excess, and you just don't give it because you're lazy or you're angry or you ignore the person or you don't care about the person or something like that. Or worst of all, you have some kind of possessiveness about the thing. You don't want to see the things that you own get less. You want to protect what you own. That kind of possessiveness is the main cause of being born as a preta. Did you have a question?
Is there a reason why giving protection is a higher type of giving than giving material things?
I you know, that's why I hesitated when I said this was the lowest, because I don't remember any particular order between these two. Mm. I know that this one is higher, but I'm not sure if there's any... I'm not sure that number two is higher than number one. Yeah.
When you talk about the general cost, is it any of the 10 days?
Yeah, done to a medium
extent. How many times do you do them?
We'll talk about it.
Yeah. Okay, there are four causes. The first cause is general disease, and then...
Then there's three specific ones.
Three specific ones within...
No, not within. This is only one general one. Okay?
Okay.
And now this is the first of the specific ones. I got two more to give you.
Okay.
Okay. I got two more to give you.
So that's number two out of the seven?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or the first of the specific.
Yeah.
All right. Now I'm going to give you number two specific cause. All right. There you go. The second specific cause is called Serna. Say Serna.
Serna.
Serna. I don't know a good nice word in English, but it means being a cheapskate. Okay. It means being cheap. It's a very specific for a tightwad. Okay, somebody who doesn't like to, somebody who's, you know, hangs on to what they own and doesn't want to share it with anybody. You can say miserliness. I don't know. Cheapness is too colloquial and miserliness is too literary, and I don't know anything between. You know, stingy is pretty good. You know, stinginess. They're not a stinginess. That's the classic cause that they often talk about in books, is Serna. Again, it's some kind of possessiveness. It's not wanting to see what you own get less. It's this misconception that protecting your wealth is the best way to keep it. Say, chato.
Chato.
Chato. Chato means jealousy. Okay. Jealousy. It's a very sick attitude for a Dharma person to have. You know, you're supposed to be a Bodhisattva. Your whole life is supposed to be aimed at seeing that other people get what they want and that other people are happy. And Chato, when it looks at someone else's happiness, wishes that they didn't have it. You know, it's a very sick state of mind. I have it a lot, so I understand it. but it's, you know, you're supposed to be on the lookout for all sentient beings. And then when somebody gets the little thing like a promotion at work, or a little more money, or has more Dharma students than you, or something like that, you feel this chakra. You know, you feel bad about that. You wish they didn't have that. So it's like the complete opposite of the whole Buddhist philosophy. And that we have it over all this, every little thing. We have chakra all the time.
So you wish that they don't have it.
Like, yeah, it's not wanting to possess it yourself necessarily. It's just this, it's being irritated that other people have success and wealth and the good things that they want and not enjoying that, but the opposite, being some kind of hatred about it. It's a weird state of mind. It's a very sick state of mind. Chato. And those are the three main causes, specific causes for being born as a prajna. I think here we have to talk about what's the process. I mean, it's almost like voodoo to say, hey, if you're jealous, you're going to end up as a spirit being that you can't see anyway. You know, I mean, it's very hard for Westerners, and I think it's good that it's hard. You know, it's hard for us to see the connection between being, you know, failing to give something because we feel possessive, and then after we die, being born into this spirit being that we've never seen, no one's ever proven it, there's no pictures or videos of them, and so I'm supposed to believe this guy who's standing up there, that if I'm jealous of somebody at work, then after I die I'm going to be born as this thing. It sounds like the religion I grew up with that I rejected, you know, they're threatening you with something, that there's this guy up in heaven who's going to punish you, and it sounds like the same spiel, I think. So I think you have to talk about how could that happen? You know, is there any logical way to show that it could happen? I think at this point, if you're talking about yidas, you have to think about the four principles of karma. So I'm going to give you the four principles of karma. If you were in the karma course, you already know them perfectly. But I'll give you the four, okay? Say, lang yapa. Lengyepa.
Lengyepa.
Okay, good. It's the first principle of karma. But first of all, I ask you, and we went through this a little bit on Friday, I think, but what's the most basic kind of karma? What is the essence of karma?
It's the movement of the mind.
Yeah. He said the movement of the mind. Abhidhamma Kosha, 4th chapter, opening lines. Which means, if you want to know where the universe came from and all the planets, and it's from karma. What is karma? It's any time your mind twitches. Anytime your mind goes from here to here, it's karma. That is the essence of karma. That's what karma really is. Action or a deed or karma is anytime your mind just shifts, that's a karma. You just did a karma. Okay? Then what you say and what you do with your body are secondary. You know, first you think of something and then you open your mouth to say something. And then you move your arms or your legs to do something, good or bad. But the essence of karma is when the mind just shifts a little bit. How many times does the mind shift in the